This podcast is a production of The Orchard, a church community located in Aurora, Illinois, whose mission is leading people into a growing relationship with Jesus Christ. Visit us online at orchardvalleyonline.com.
So I'm originally from the suburbs of Cincinnati, Ohio, where my parents live to this day. And one summer as a kid, we would take, actually every summer, we would take a trip out to Oklahoma, because that's where all of our relatives were from. And I'm an Okie from Muskogee, so I admit that. And so we take the trip, the long trek out there, and one day we were at my uncle's farm. And my uncle's farmhouse I loved, because, you know, as a kid, kind of growing up in the suburbs, you see a little bit of the farmland, but hadn't really experienced the farm life. And so we got immersed in the farm life. And so, of course, he had us doing chores and all this wonderful stuff. But then we got playtime. And he took me into this barn, and I was playing, I was swinging from the rafters. This was before I realized that I was horribly allergic to hay and dust, and which I found out that summer. And so here I am playing, I'm just having a great time. I'm like literally diving into the hay. You know what I'm talking about? I'm like, you can't find me, and I can't breathe for some reason. And so I'm like, I'm so thirsty. I'm like, I'm parched. Because, you know, as a kid, you just don't realize when you get thirsty, you know, after a while. And so I had just been playing for so long. So I run to the farmhouse, knock on the door, and my uncle greets me. And I said, I'm dying. Please give me some water. And so I watch him. And it seemed like, you know, ever seen those horror movies where it just seems like it takes him forever to get water? You know, and I'm like, please, could you hurry up? I'm dying here. I'm like 5 or 6, you know, so it seems like an eternity. So he gets out this glass of water here. I mean, this glass was like, you know, again, I'm not that tall now, but back then I mean, this thing looked larger than life. So he's filling it up, and I'm just like, oh, this is going to be the best ever. So I take the glass, and I'm just gulping. I'm just letting it wash over me like a shower. It's just wonderful. And then I get about halfway down, and I take a breath, and suddenly my nose kicks in, because I can suddenly smell what's happening here. Anybody ever have well water? You ever drink? Now, Yeah, some of you were like, I got it now, you know. Well, let me just tell you, if you like it, it's definitely an acquired taste, because you're not going to be like, you know what, I'd really like some well water, if you don't mind. You know, the bottled water's good, but if you could bottle up some well water, because this stuff, it's rotten eggs. I mean, that's the best way I could describe it. It's like, it's sulfur water or something like that, but it was just god-awful. I mean, I just remember just being like, oh, what have you done to me? I mean, you've scarred me for life. I know I'm going to be in therapy about this someday. And so, you know what? Didn't care, though. I mean, even though as bad as it was, and as much as I would never, ever drink this stuff again. You know what I did? I was so thirsty that I took the glass with one hand now, and I held my nose. And I'm like, I'm going to finish this baby if it's the last thing I do. Why? Because I was thirsty. I had to have water. My body was screaming. And ironically, this last week, I was sent an email. Some of you may have received one like this. It was about water versus Coca-Cola. And it says, you know, interesting facts as they were listed out in this email. One of them was 75% of Americans, now I don't know why it's like Americans, but 75% of Americans are chronically dehydrated. Wow, didn't know that. It also said 37% of Americans have their thirst mechanism. It's so weak that they often mistake thirst for hunger. Didn't know that either. And they also said that lack of water is the number one trigger of daytime fatigue. I was like, wow, this is pretty interesting. Now, the list wasn't so kind to Coke drinkers. Any Coca-Cola drinkers in here? Anybody right now, you're like, I'm jonesing for a Coke. Where is it? Some of you, like, have a little sippy cup. I know right now you're like, you know what I mean? But the best thing about Coke that was in this email is this, that you can remove grease from clothes by emptying a can of Coke into a load of greasy clothes, adding detergent, and running it through the regular cycle. Did you know that? Yeah, some of you are like, hello, it's what I do now. I don't need Tide. I'm just using Coca-Cola. And then And it also helps loosen grease stains. It will also clean road haze from your windshield. Some of you are like suddenly taking notes. You're like, man, this is good stuff. I need to like write this down. But not so good thing about Coke, but great stuff about water. I mean, it went on to list the attributes of water. But because our bodies need water. Over half of our bodies consist of water, our cells, everything. So when we get low on water, our hydration reflex kicks in and says, hello, I'm thirsty down here. Can you give me some water? And that's, we need aquatic replenishment. That's the way God designed our bodies. And today I want to talk about something that is basic for spiritual replenishment. Some way that God designed our faith, our spirit beings, where he says, you know, this aspect of you is not just made up, your faith is not made up of 50% of this. It's made up of 100% of this. This is how important it is to your spirit. And we're talking, Mike was just singing about it earlier. It's called grace, grace. Now, for some of you who are further along in your journey, what this is going to be today is it's going to be a reminder of grace. And for those of you who have not heard about grace before, then this is going to be, I don't know what you call it, maybe a minder, okay? So we got a reminder or a minder of grace. But either way, today we're going to talk about that. And, you know, the word's used a lot, different ways. How many of you have heard, you know, let's say grace, and then you say rub-a-dub-dub, thanks for the grub, and then, you know, we're done. Just we've at least covered our meal, you know. At our house, we're like, you know what, the ritual of prayer before a meal, we just pray over the groceries, and we're just like, okay, Lord, as we're shopping, it's like, bless the carrots, and thank you for all of this stuff, so that when we meet, see, then we can get right into the meal one step earlier. Some of you are really taking notes now. See, a pastor actually said this was okay. So, but for some of us, it's a spiritual ritual at a dinner table. Other people, it's like grace is like, okay, give me grace, you know, because somebody's like we're asking for leniency because somebody's coming down on us or something. But for a follower of Jesus, grace cannot be ignored. It's absolutely huge. That's because our faith is fueled by grace. Simply put, and this is a simple definition of grace, grace is God's unconditional love and favor that he has for us. No strings attached, nothing we can do. It's just God saying, you know what? I want to love you where you are, the way you are, and I also look at you with eyes of favor. Just let that sink in for a minute. And see, the thing is, God said, you know, it's good that we have this love and people can understand grace, but I want them to actually experience grace. Because if God is love and grace is how we come to know him, it's like God says, you know what, I want you to experience it firsthand. So what does he do? He sends his son Jesus. Grace now becomes personified in the person of Jesus Christ. And anyone who decides to follow Jesus can't escape grace. Because his life, I mean, Jesus did not have the easiest life in the world. I mean, if you follow the life of Christ, we see that he was oftentimes followed by people who didn't like him. They wanted to put him to death. And ultimately, of course, we know that they did. I mean, it was a hard life. And yet, so in his life, Jesus showed us how to live and endure hardship with grace. And then he also, even in his death, we see that Jesus shows us that it was God's ability to say, you know what, the work's already been done. Even though you may not deserve grace from me, guess what? I'm going to give it to you because of my son, Jesus, who died on a cross for you. So now, grace is now, even in his death, he says, I'm going to widen this thing out. Not only are you going to be able to see it, because some people think, wow, Jesus was just a great teacher, and you can certainly learn from his life. But now he's like taking it a step further. Not only can you learn from my teaching, but now you can actually experience grace yourself through the death of Jesus on the cross. Wow. So now it's level playing field for everybody. And then he takes it one step further in the resurrection. And now that we learn in our spirit person, we can now come alive and live an abundant life every single day because now Jesus was raised from the dead. So grace now becomes our oxygen that we begin to breathe in our spirits. And earlier we played a song by U2 that was simply called Grace. And Bono was interviewed once about the song. And he said this. Bono said, You see, at the center of all religions is this idea of karma. You know, what you put out then comes back to you. It's an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, or in physics and physical laws, every action is met by an equal or opposite reaction. It's clear to me that karma is at the very heart of the universe. I'm absolutely sure of it. And yet, he says, along comes this idea called grace to upend all that as you reap, you will sow stuff. He says, grace defies reason and logic. Love interrupts, if you like, the consequences of your actions, which in my case is very good news indeed because I've done a lot of stupid stuff. And then, of course, like a good interviewer says, I'd be interested to hear about that. And then Bono says, that's between me and God. But he says, I'd be in trouble if karma was going to finally be my judge. I'd be in deep, his words, doo-doo. It doesn't excuse my mistakes, but I'm holding out for grace, he says. I'm holding out that Jesus took my sins onto the cross because I know who I am, and I hope I don't have to depend on my own religiosity. The point of the death of Christ is that Christ took on the sins of the world so that what we put out did not come back upon us, and that our sinful nature does not reap the obvious death. That's the point. It should keep us humbled. It's not our own good works that get us through the gates of heaven. That's pretty good stuff from a rocker of the self-proclaimed world's greatest rock band. And I think he needs a little dose of humility himself, right? But see, that's the point. See, Jesus takes all the stuff onto his back, all of our junk, all of our messed up lives. He strapped it onto himself and decides not to point a condemning finger at us, but rather extends a hand of love, his hand of grace. And I love how he talks about this whole idea of karma. And even in the song, it says it travels outside of karma. Because karma is like making it not only into, you know, some faith-based talks and stuff. Karma is actually making it like into conversations. I know there's a sports radio guy that I hear, Jim Rome. I don't know if he's here in Chicago or not. But he's like, they talk about karma. And he's like, hey, I need some karma, Jim. You know, could you give me karma? Well, and everybody kind of knows this idea. Karma is almost like a pop culture word nowadays. It's like, ooh, if I do something bad, then I know something bad's going to happen to me. Or if I do something good, I know that something good's going to happen to me. And here's Bono saying, you know what? If that's it, that's a tough way to go. Because he's like, I've done a lot of bad stuff. And if all my bad stuff, suddenly I'm like, wow, all that bad stuff's going to come back upon me, that idea of karma, then I'm in trouble. And I don't know about you guys, but I feel the same way. And then along comes the thing called grace, where God's like, you know what? All that messy stuff, all that junk that you've done, all the sins that you've built up and accumulated over time, guess what I want to do with you? I want to take all that and I want to shove it right down your throat. No, he doesn't say that, does he? Some of you are like, wow, what kind of gospel is that? Who is this guy again, Scott? No, see, Jesus doesn't do that because that's exactly what we expect. Because that's the life that we live in. You know, it's like, you know, if you do something bad or something does something, if I do something bad to somebody else, it's going to come right back on me. And that's what we get conditioned to believe in. And that's why I think sometimes grace is so hard to such a hard concept to think about. Because no, God didn't say, you know what, I'm going to shove it down your throat. He's like, no, I'm going to take it and I'm going to eat it. I'm going to take it for you. And what I'm going to give back to you is love. That's called grace. And it's a really cool thing. And a friend of mine, he lives in San Francisco, and he's part of a creative artistic faith community. And they wanted to do an art show that was completely inspired by this idea of grace. And so they decided that they would walk around the neighborhood, and they would just look at on the streets for trash. I mean, the filthiest stuff they could find, that's exactly what they wanted. So they got, like, you know, empty bottles of stuff and broken glass, and they had syringes and all this stuff. Stuff that would make up, like, that you'd find in the gritty downtown San Francisco or wherever of a major city area. So they got it all, and they brought it back, and for a week, they all collaborated. And these weren't like, you know, amateur artists. These were actually very good. This was an artist community. And so then they took this stuff and only using garbage from the streets and some paint and a canvas, that was it. they began to create these beautiful works of art. And they were absolutely gorgeous. And so then what he did is they threw this big party, an art show, where they invited people from all over their neighborhood to their house. They had music, they served wine and cheese. And as their neighbors went through the house, if they liked one of the pieces, they might talk to the artist about it. Hey, what does this mean? And they might strike up a conversation. But the only thing that that person had to do was just ask, how much is that piece? And the person would say, well, would you like to have it? And they said, yeah, I'd love to have it. And then it was given away to them free. No strings attached. No money amount at all. They were able to have it for free. And I love that idea. Beautiful trash. Beautiful artistic trash now hanging in their neighbors' homes. See, grace makes beauty out of ugly things. And because of Jesus' work on the cross, God looks at us like those artists viewed the trash. See, they weren't looking at like, oh man, this is trash. We need to clean this up and throw it away. See, what the artists were looking at, they were saying, you know what? There's something very redemptive in that piece of trash. There's something that is so nice, so cool, that if we collectively brought that trash together, we could make something really beautiful out of this thing. And I think that's just such a great concept, because that's exactly how God views us. Not as trash, as some people in the world may view us, or maybe you've been told that you're not worth anything, or that you're just a piece of trash, or you're worthless. Maybe you've been told that in your life. And you know how God views you? He views you with those eyes of favor and those eyes of grace. It kind of reminds me of this picture as I was thinking about this concept. I was like, you know what? You've got this circle, and then you've got the cross right in the middle. And intentional or not, it kind of like looks like a bullseye, you know? And it's kind of like, see, that's kind of like that idea of grace, is that God views us through lenses like that, through the cross. And when he looks at us, he was like, you know what? If that person's life is messed up, or if that person has if they've been told that they're not worthy, or they're just a piece of trash, you know, when God looks at us, he looks at us with the bullseye of grace. He says, that's exactly where I want to take aim at. And rather than giving them what they've always experienced, somebody hammering them with lies, I want to give them the truth. And the truth is, I love them. The truth is, I forgive them. And the truth is, I want them to experience grace. And if this all sounds like really good news, it's because it is. I mean, it's great news. But the problem is that for so many of us, if you've been followers of Jesus for a while, or even if you haven't, this whole idea, it defies logic, like Bono said. It just doesn't make sense. And I think it's because all around us in this world, we're surrounded by disgrace. We're surrounded, in this instant, I would use disgrace as lack of grace. Our world makes it a bit hard to believe in, for example, the idea of you can receive something for nothing. I mean, when they were trying to give these pieces of painting away, they were like, wait, where's the newsletter? Where's the, you know what I mean? There's got to be something here. They're like, no, I want you to have it. It would be an honor for me to give this to you and have you hang this on your wall somewhere. I think our world makes it a bit hard to believe in something for nothing. We're inundated. How many of you see those ads on the web page or something, these banner ads that say, click here, receive free iPod. And you're like, that's it? You know, when I first was on the internet, it was like, yeah, I'm clicking, you know, and it goes you to this thing. It's like a 5-year subscription to such and such magazine, and you might be entered into a drawing for an iPod. You know what I mean? It just can't be true. Or there's another one that's like, have you ever seen those pictures? Answer this question. Who is this a picture of? Hillary Clinton, O.J. Simpson, or Mother Teresa? And you're like, Looks a lot like O.J. Simpson, but I'm sure there's a trick here because I get a free laptop if I get this right. You know, I mean, it's just like you're conditioned to realize that's there's no way. And then there's those emails. You ever gotten those emails from the person on the other side of the globe? And they're like, I need a bank deposit. I just need a bank account to deposit $15 million. Because for some reason they couldn't get one. They have $15 million, but they couldn't get a bank account. And I'm like, wow, that's crazy. Well, sure, you can use mine because they want to leave 10% for you. I'm like, that's a great deal, isn't it? I just give them my bank account number. That's awesome. Here you go, buddy. Anybody do that, by the way? Does that work? Because, by the way, I'm bankrupt, and we're going to take an offering here a second. No, I'm kidding. I'm just kidding. But see, again, the whole idea. See, we're conditioned not to believe that stuff. And I think for us, if you're even thinking about taking that step, that journey with Jesus Christ, and to think it doesn't make any sense that, wait a minute, grace is, there's no strings attached. I don't even have to click on something or what. It's not even a click. It's just accepting it. That's crazy. But the reality is true grace comes with no strings attached. The Apostle Paul wrote in his letter to the church at Ephesus, chapter 2, verse 8. He says, God saved you by his grace when you believed in him. And you can't take credit for this. It's a gift from God. Paul is saying that becoming a follower of Jesus has nothing to do with us and everything to do with Jesus. See, he decided to make the first move, not us, because we couldn't do it. And see, the reality is God's like, you know what? Here's the deal. If you think that you can buy your way into grace, it's impossible. Why is that, God? Why can't I do that? Because you don't have enough money. I mean, think about this. I mean, it's disrespectful to say to God, how much for your son? How much? Have you ever thought about it that way? Or how many works can I do to pay for your son's death? Tell me. You know, I'll do it. I'll write the check. I mean, is that disrespectful or what? I mean, I can't even imagine giving up one of my daughters for anything. And yet God said, you know what? Not only am I going to show you grace through my son, but I'm also going to show you through his death, he's going to die for you. Wait a minute. Hang on a second. And there's no way you can afford that. There's no way you can buy that. There's no way you can. It's impossible. So the only way I could even give it to you is if it were free. That's it. And that's the beautiful thing about God's grace. Another picture of disgrace that we see all around us is perfectionism. And I would say perfectionism, it's kind of the antonym of grace. It's like the opposite. That would be the perfect opposite of grace. Because perfectionism is that idea that, you know what, you're not good enough. You're not smart enough. You don't look good enough. You don't dress well enough. There's no way you can be good enough. It's impossible. And so the perfectionism just keeps growing and growing and growing, and it can never be fed enough. It's impossible. And I think it's alive and well in America. A youth pastor friend of mine told me a story of his parents in his church who desperately wanted at least one of their kids to go to Wheaton. I don't know why. It was like they wanted to go as parents, and they didn't get in. Their oldest kids hadn't gone in, so they had one more shot with their youngest. And when he received the letter from Wheaton, it informed him that he didn't make it in. And his parents were devastated. He was like, yeah, it's okay. They were devastated. So they wound up yelling at him and saying, why didn't you get in? Why couldn't you have done a little bit more, a little bit better? Well, then Wheaton, a couple weeks later, informs him that they had made a clerical error and that he had actually been accepted after all. He was accepted by the school, but the rejection from his parents, you can't undo that. Parents living vicariously through their kids. And I think a lot of times we're guilty of that. Bosses. How many of you know of bosses who don't give encouragement? And they continue just to expect more and more and more. You know, and think about it. You're in a job 40, 50, 60, 70 hours a week. What are you getting? Are you getting any grace? Absolutely not. So again, you're conditioned to not even think about grace. Because again, you're not experiencing it. If anything, it's just hammered home again. You're not doing enough. You're not good enough. You got to do more. And in our neighborhoods, even where we live, I mean, it's the setting the bar higher and higher with all kinds of stuff. Anybody have the perfect neighbors that live next door? Oh, man, don't you just want to hurt them? Like, I grew up, see, my big thing, anybody is a lawn junkie? Anybody? Lawn junkie? Okay, anybody? Because if you are and you know of a support group, I would love to join it. Because that's like my deal. I don't know why. I think actually I do know why. It's because I grew up next door to the house that had the perfect lawn. Like every blade of grass was numbered. You know what I mean? And they all stood up straight like this at attention. We're here for service today. Isn't the sun beautiful? It was like this dark green grass, rich, no weeds. And like our grass was like shameful. I mean, I love my dad and everything, but man, I was just like embarrassed. I was like, Dad, why can't we have grass like this? Look at our house. It's like got weeds. There's brown patches. Look at our neighbor's grass. It's perfect. I mean, everything in a row, and they just wave like this when the wind's out. You know what I mean? And it affected me. I have to be honest. It affected me because, the ball would go into the neighbor's yard. It was one of those yards that you couldn't do it. You know, I couldn't even walk into their yard. Seriously, they had like rules, you know, don't go in the yard. So we had to like call them on the phone and say, they pick up the phone. Is it the ball again? Yeah, it's the ball. Can you come out and get it? Sure. So they're like tiptoeing. Sending it back over to the crappy lawn. Thank you very much. But, you know, we get, like, we live in these neighborhoods, and it's, like, conditioned that way, you know? And it's, like, you know, right down the street, he gets a new boat. I mean, my neighbor, there's two people that live next door to me, and they have three cars and a boat. I'm like, what's the third car for? I mean, they have a dog. I don't know. I mean, but it's, like, but see, this is disgrace. It's lack of grace. Why? Because, again, we're all around us. It's like setting the bar a little higher. Oh, you know, Judy just got a nose job. You know, or you know, the neighbors right across the street, their kids just got into, look at the school they got into. You know, it's the school of the holy, creative, intelligent kids, you know, or whatever. And my kid didn't. What's up, you know? I mean, fill in the blank. It's like this, it just keeps, it's like this voracious appetite perfectionism is, and it keeps getting higher. And the church isn't immune to disgrace, you know, from scandals in the church or our own set of standards and judgments that make the church, unfortunately, a place of avoidance instead of a sanctuary. I was reading one woman's story who was going through a difficult time because of some bad choices that she made, and someone invited her to church, and she said, "Church, why would I want to go there? I'll just feel worse about myself." Man. See, Jesus is saddened with this woman's feelings. In fact, Jesus is precisely the person that someone who is hurting would want to go to. He was slapped with the label friend of sinners. Where did he hang out? He hung out with prostitutes, people with contagious and curable diseases, cheaters, people that were down and out on their luck. In fact, not only did he hang out with them, he sought them out. It says he was moved with compassion. And see, that's what grace is all about. Grace finds weakness. Grace seeks imperfection. Grace feeds on humiliation. Grace dines with the outcast. Grace loves on the sinner. Grace makes music for the suffering. Grace is a friend of the poor, the persecuted, the widow, the orphan. Grace makes ugly things beautiful. And I tell you, I'm for one, I'm glad for grace. Paul wrote in Romans 5:20, he says, "Where sin increased, grace increased all the more, so that just as sin reigned in death, so also grace might reign through righteousness to bring eternal life through Jesus Christ our Lord." So think about that. Think about what he's saying for a minute. The worst things are when we're most vulnerable, when we're most broken up, when most of us are up to our eyeballs in sin, the more relentless grace is in its search to find us and extend its hand to us and pull us up. So the messier our lives become, even if we're the ones who caused it, the more grace comes alive in our life. Isn't that great? The more abundant it is. personally, you know, I've been in one of those seasons of like kind of those messy seasons, you know, where it's like just kind of a funk. You know, have you ever had those funky seasons? 2 years ago, I published, Scott was talking about a book. I published a book with a major a publisher, was asked to be the lead pastor of the church that I was on staff with for nine years. And because of my book, I was asked to go around in the country and speak. And I mean, it was like everything was going right. I mean, everything I touched was just happening right. And isn't that what life's like all the time? Isn't it great? Yeah, it's like, why can't it be? You know, well, I guess that would be called heaven. All right, but it's like everything was going. In fact, it kind of reminds me of this book. We have nightly rituals at our house with my daughters, and one of them is like, you know, you got your story time, you've got your song, after brushing teeth, of course, and there could be a diaper with my 19-month-old. But you know, you just have certain routines that you do before you go to bed, and one of those routines, we got into kind of this slump because it lasted like 3 months. And it was reading this book called Oh, the Places You'll Go by Dr. Seuss. Anybody know that book? Yeah. See, this book, I read it for a little while, and I'm like, oh, it's a nice kid's book. You know, by the way, it was 3 months long, seriously. I mean, my four-year-old, she was relentless. Every night, it had to be Oh, the Places You'll Go, and I had to read it a certain way, you know, and everything like that. So, by the end of the third month, I'm like, this Seuss guy's brilliant. He's like, because there's like this one page is like, you're going to soar higher than the rest. You're going to be the best of the best. First of all, when I read it, I was like, oh man, this is more self-esteem crap, you know, that we're feeding our kids. But then all of a sudden you turn the page and it says, except when you don't, because sometimes you won't. I'm sad to say, but it's true that bang-ups and hang-ups can happen to you. And I'm like, there you go, Seuss, man. He's the man right there, you know? Because that's it. I mean, it's kind of like the stock market. You know, everything can be going great, and then all of a sudden, bam. And that's what my last year, I'm like, what happened? We were within this close as I was lead pastor of buying a theater that we were going to move our church into. And the day I'm getting ready to sign the papers, the guy decides to sell it to somebody who wants to turn it into a sports bar. It's like, what? I mean, we'd spent earnest money and all this stuff up front, and he decides to sell it. And then like a few months later, it was like our board, I had issues with the board as far as our visions of what we wanted to do into the future. We just kind of were separating on it. I was like, what? God, what is going on here? Why is this happening? Just scratching my head. But what I realize is the older I get, the more I realize that, you know, life is not just this trajectory that's going continually up. It's the ebb and flow. It's the ups and the downs. And I realize how I need to reconnect with grace every day. Because you know what? Today, I may be on top of the world, and then guess what? Monday hits. You know what I mean? And guess what? We don't know when Monday hits. Some of you are like, oh, don't talk about Monday. It's full of disgrace. I don't want to go there. So, okay, we won't even think about Monday. Let's focus right here on Sunday. But it's true. You don't know when that next thing's going to hit. We have to continually be reconnected with grace every day, whether I'm in the zone where nothing can go wrong or whether I'm in the penalty box where nothing can go right. You just never know. Philip Keller wrote these words. He says, you know, we often hear people saying, I want to move to higher ground with God. And often we get an erroneous idea about how this takes place. Every mountain has its valleys. Its sides are scarred by deep ravines and gulches and draws. And the best route to the top is always along these valleys. Any shepherd familiar with the high country knows this. He leads his flock gently but persistently up the paths that wind through the dark valleys. And I thought, man, that's really cool. Because you know what? A lot of the stuff that we go through in the darkness of life and as we're going through those valleys, sometimes we're like, what's the purpose? What's the reality? What is this all about? And God wants us to remind us, you know what? It's just a reminder that you need grace. It's just a reminder that whatever success definition, fill in the blank, you may put in your Google search, or you've decided what success looks like for your life, he's like, you know what? It's not. Real success is simply this, grace. If you've received grace, congratulations. You've arrived. That's all you need for this life. I'm a sinner saved by grace. That's the best I'll ever be. It's also the worst I'll ever be, too. And that's the cool thing. So when those valleys hit, it's like God's reminding you, you know what? There's something in here that you are going to be reminded once again of how much you need grace. And guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to pour it onto you. I'm going to lavish you with grace. Because you know what? You're thirsty. You're dehydrated, and you don't even know it. Because your blinders have been on, and you've forgotten that you need grace. So God gives us those reminders. And then we reconnect with it once again. And that's what God does with us. Again, from Paul. And by the way, Paul, I'm a lot of these verses I have from Paul, because I think Paul's one of these guys that's like, I need grace. I mean, think about if you study the story of Paul and his life, it's like Paul becomes a follower of Jesus, and then the disciples are like, well, I don't want Paul. Paul, like, was trying to kill us a few weeks ago. What's going on with that? And then once he does get accepted, Paul's like, you know what? I want to bring this story and this message of grace to everybody, not just the Jews. And they're like, you're going to do what? You can't do that. And so then Paul decides, I'm going to do it anyway. So he does it, and he goes on this. So he's doing this great thing of sharing the message. And then what happens? He gets shipwrecked and finally winds up a horrible death for his faith. I mean, if there's one person in life that's like, that I love to read, I love to read Paul, because here's a guy that needed a lot of grace, and he was extended a lot of grace. But out of that story, listen to these words that Paul writes in his second letter to the church at Corinth, chapter 12. He says, and this is his words from God, my grace is enough. It's all you need. My strength comes into its own in your weakness. Wow. See, that's really cool. So the strength of God, the grace of God, all the goodness of God is made even stronger when we're weaker. That's an upside down reality in this world. Because we always think, no, the strong prevail. No, God says it's the weak. In your weakness, guess what? I'm going to give you more grace. Because that's what I do. And I love you enough to do that. So what do we do with that? What do we do with God's grace? We've reconnected now with God's grace. What do? The only thing we can do, respond. We respond. So we're reminded of God's grace, we reconnect, and now we respond. And it's because of God's free gift of grace that we can't keep it in. In fact, I mean, think about it. If you've been condemned your whole life, or told one thing your whole life, and then suddenly God, the maker of the universe, really our Father, the only one whose acceptance should really matter in our life anyway, suddenly he says, I accept you, I forgive you, I release you, I want you to live an abundant life. That's pretty good news, isn't it? I mean, it's good enough to now, I want to respond. I got to respond to that. I can't just contain that. And so here's a couple ways we respond. One of them is through worship. When we sing on a Sunday morning, one of that is that way of saying, God, man, your grace is awesome. I want to respond to you. And so we sing. And Scott spoke with you the last few weeks about ancient practices that also help us to respond and reconnect with God and his grace. But, and you know, sometimes we feel like those things that we're asked to do in the church, it's like, man, I got to get baptized, and I got to read my Bible, and I got to pray, and I got to take communion and all these other things. You feel like they're not heavy weights. Because sometimes it may feel like, you know, man, the more I do, the more I'm going to get grace for God, the better I can do. And see, that's not it at all. God's like, you know, I don't want you to do these things because you're trying to get ahead. Because by the way, again, you can't buy me off. I can't be bought with your obedience. Even though, yeah, we're asked to be obedient. See, we're obedient because of grace. Because of his love, because of his great mercy when we were at our lowest point. It's like, man, I want to pray. I want to reconnect. I need that grace. I need that love. I want to respond. I want to be baptized. I want to pray. I want to worship. I want to do that. Why? Because, man, we have now been set free. But the best way we can respond to grace is by recycling it. the most renewable resource on this planet, sorry, Al Gore, it's not a natural resource. It's a supernatural one. It's called grace. Grace was never intended to be a gift that is kept. It's to be constantly recycled. And like those artists who had lenses to see beauty in the discarded things, God wants us to put on what one early Christian in the second century called grace-healed eyes. Eyes that see people not as hassles, but as candidates of grace. Eyes that look at those in need, not as an interruption to their schedule, but as the main attraction in their lives. There's a see, what God does is he begins to help us to see the world through different lenses. You know, my 13-year-old, when she was younger, I remember this one particular day. I was, you know, out with my fertilizer and my weed whacker and everything, and I was the Terminator that day, you know. Any weed could not stand a chance. I was just going to be like, go ahead and make my day, you know. It's like I was just gonna nail them all. And then right in the middle of the lawn, Reagan, she was about 4 years old, she was like, "Dad, look," and she points at it. And I look at it, and to my horror, right in the middle of my lawn is a dandelion in all of its yellow, hideous glory. Just mocking me. Like, look at this. You missed me. You know? And I was just horrified. And I told you I'm sick with this whole thing. I mean, I need help, I know. But I was like... My daughter, I was like ashamed because my daughter had to look at this hideousness. And I felt the shame going back to my childhood. I was taken back to the perfect yard next door and then my yard. And I was like, oh, Reagan, I'm so sorry. I mean, I know it's horrible. It's a weed. It's so bad. And she just looked at me with this puzzled eyes. And she's like, no, Dad, look. And I looked a little closer and suddenly I got it. And she shakes her head and she was like, it's a flower. And all of a sudden, I'm like, I'm sick. I'm so sick. So what we did, of course, I didn't terminate it at that point. I cut it. I mean, we got a vase. We put it right on the dinner table. And I'm like, look at this flower, honey. You know, and forever. Now I just let weeds grow ever. No, I don't. I'm still trapped. I need help. I need grace. But even to this day, I've got another of my 4-year-old now. As we're driving through the neighbor's lawn, our neighbors love us because as I'm pushing her through the stroller, Ramsey's like, "Stop, Dad!" She's like picking up all the dandelions and she's bringing them home to Mom. And look, Mom, it's a bouquet. Oh, thank you so much. So of course we put them in the vases again. But I mean, the reality is this: yeah, you can look at things like a weed, or you can look at them for the beauty that's in them. And I think when we receive that type of grace, when we feel like a weed, and God's like, you're not a weed, you're a flower. See, how do we respond to that? How do we recycle that? You know how we do it? God gives us those grace-filled eyes where we looked at the world one-dimensionally, and he says, wow, look at this. I'm looking at this world in a whole new light. That's not garbage. Those aren't weeds. Those are flowers. That person was created in God's holy image. And I want to redeem that. I want to do something with that. I want to make something beautiful out of that. Paul wrote these words to the church in Corinth. He says, we're not keeping this quiet, not on your life. Just like the psalmist who wrote, I believed it, so I said it. We say what we believe. And what we believe is that the one who raised up the Master Jesus will just as certainly raise us up with you alive. So every detail works to your advantage and to God's glory. More and more grace, more and more people, more and more praise. So we're not giving up. How could we? Even though on the outside, it often looks like we're falling apart on us. On the inside, where God is making new life, not a day goes by without his unfolding grace. These hard times are small potatoes compared to the coming good times. the lavish celebration prepared for us. There's far more here than meets the eye. The things that we see now are here today, gone tomorrow, but the things we can't see now will last forever. See, here's the deal. You can't see grace, but you know when you've experienced it. And like Paul said, you can't keep it quiet. You can't contain it. Because the older we get, the more we need grace. The more grace we need and the more we ask for it, the more he gives. And the more he gives, the more we want to respond to it. And we want to recycle it. And the more we recycle it and give it away, the more we need it. So the more he gives back to us. And it's the cycle of grace that every day he wants us to experience and give back. And so we recycle grace by doing just what's been done to us. God forgave us. We forgive others. God loved us in our ugliest state, so we need to love the unlovable. God gave us a hand when no one else would. We need to look for the least in society to see who needs a hand and then respond appropriately. So now that we can look at life's dark moments as opportunities to be reminded of God's grace, to see them as times to reconnect or maybe connect for the first time to his grace. And because of that great grace, we want to respond and ultimately recycle that grace to others. Let's bow in a word of prayer. Father, this morning we pray to you as people that are in need of grace. Lord, we're a little grace deficient in this world. And God, I thank you for your great grace. God, I thank you for your incredible love. Lord, your great mercy to us is just beyond what we can even think or imagine. And Lord, it's tough for me, it's tough for us, when we're surrounded by so much disgrace all the time. And we just see a lack of grace all around us. And it's tough for us when we haven't been feeling grace from other people to us. And there's that perfectionism that creeps in. And there's that logic thing that says you can't receive something for nothing. There's those moments where we begin to think in terms of, I just don't know if I can accept something like that, that forgiveness. But Lord, I thank you that along comes grace to break through our preconditioned responses, to break through our ideas and our logic, to break through the times when we feel that we're at our worst or our ugliest, or our most sinful. That's when grace breaks through, when love becomes so much more apparent in our life and more abundant, because that's the kind of God you are, never leaving us in our own state. And God, I pray for those today that may have said, you know what, I haven't heard something like this before. This is kind of a new concept for me. God, I pray that today you would help them to realize that this thing called grace, it's for the taking. It just needs to be received. Lord, I pray that they would respond today to that. God, I pray for others, Lord, that maybe this is a reminder, but they've just been feeling beaten down through life or circumstance. Lord, I pray that grace would just be so real today in their lives that they would just take a big drink. Realize that, you know what? I can't do this on my own. I can't make it on my own. I need the grace of God today to fuel me, to rehydrate me, and to help me to live again free. Lord, I pray for all of us, God, that as we experience that grace, Lord, that we'd respond to it and we'd recycle it. That we'd sing back to you, God. We'd sing not just with words, Lord, but we'd sing with our lives and we'd make music with grace. And whether it's at our job or our school or at home or in our neighborhoods, God, wherever it is, that we would truly be rocking the world of people around us by singing grace, by being grace, by living grace, and recycling it for others to experience, God. Help us to be that hand extended. And we just thank you for it, God. Thank you for the privilege to be able to walk in that today. We ask it in your name we pray. Amen. Amen.